So we have a very special podcast for you today. It's John Rocky. He has been doing gravel and cycling probably longer than most folks in the area and competing at a very high level. Very excited to have this episode out and live. We learn a lot about his nutrition and his training and what his mindset is going into racing. So I hope you enjoy this recording of the podcast that we made in July of 2023. All righty. Well, welcome everybody to another episode of the Iowa Gravel Series Podium Podcast. I'm so grateful to have a wonderful guest today, John Rocky. Get to know him a little bit. I know he's been on a couple races, but recently he podiumed at our Silver City Century in 2023. John, thank you so much for your time and jumping on the podcast here with me today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no, this is wonderful. So, John, I know just a little bit about you from reputation. I know that when someone was looking through the roster at Silver City, someone's like, "Oh, John Rocky's going to be there." Well, he's pretty strong, so that's going to be good. And I think I've seen your name float around different Omaha lists and everything. But tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you living, and how did you get there?
I'm in Lincoln, grew up here, left for a while, came back, really, and don't see myself leaving. It's become home again. Great roads here. It's where I live in the middle of the city. We have two old rails to trails here. I can be on those paths in 15 minutes and not dealing with traffic, just... Yeah, and one of them goes all the way to Kansas. The other one goes to the Platte River. So, yeah, definitely enjoy living here. And I have a lot of friends, family, so stuck here.
It might have been my connection a little bit. I might have missed a little bit in the recording at the beginning. Did you grow up in Lincoln?
Yeah, I grew up here and left. Was out in Colorado for about 10 years. And came back in 98, I think, and have kind of been here since. Love it here.
What part of Colorado?
I was in Winter Park a bunch. I was in Fort Collins for a while. Spent like 8 winters up in Winter Park. I snowboarded for all those years and then raced mountain bikes in the summer. And that's kind of how I got into cycling, honestly, is mountain bike racing. And that was, 93, I think, was my first mountain bike race. So I had been a skateboarder from about 14 to 18, 19. And my good friends who were kind of the older guys that I looked up to from skateboarders ended up getting into mountain biking. And that was kind of just starting like in late 80s. So it was kind of a natural transition to be like, oh, I'm done skating. I've gotten hurt a whole bunch. Time to kind of do something less gnarly, and got into mountain biking. Not to say you can't get hurt doing that, but the skill set kind of switched over. So I did that, raced a bunch. I think my first race was in 93 up in the mountains. And then there was a great series here called the Cyclopass series. It's not here anymore, but that. Now that probably started, I'm going to say, early 90s. So
Cyclopath was, so let's back up for a second. So you're in Colorado. Were you working or were you going to school?
No, I was working. Okay. Just working up at a restaurant in Winter Park and just being a bum, snowboarding every day.
Oh, I am so jealous. Like, because I think you're, I'm a few years behind you. But yeah, 93 was about, you're not that old. You're not that, don't give me that, because 93, I was getting my first mountain bike as well, but I was, you know, late junior high sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so I would have loved to be in Winter Park in that terrain in that area, because snowboarding was still very new. So that makes sense. If you came from skateboarding, snowboarding was something probably you were very excited about.
Yeah, for sure.
And then,
Straight out of high school, three of my good friends here, we all moved up there. That's what you're supposed to do in your 20s is enjoy life and work at a restaurant, do whatever you want.
Oh, man, that sounds fantastic. So I'm assuming that, you know, mountain biking at that time, kind of early time, it was kind of downhill, but I can't imagine, you know, I remember the equipment at that time. And maybe if you were really, if you had a sponsor or something, like you could really get some interesting mountain bikes with suspension or something that kind of like ease out the bumps and stuff. But at least for me, like it was like maybe you had somebody with a RockShox fork, but everything else was hardtail for the most part. What were you riding back then?
Yeah, there was a bunch of really good guys here from Nebraska at that period. One of them, Mark Savory, worked for Answer and did a bunch of tech for them. And I think he designed some forks, actually. And another guy, Lance Boyles, was really worked for them for Answer. So we kind of, you know, through friends, I kind of had not necessarily hookups, but there was a great bike shop here too, Bike Peddlers, where all my friends worked there. So it was kind of a pretty good community of people getting into it. And it was Team Snort was actually the team. And they were, it was kind of the beginning of the mountain bike era. Honestly, those guys were kind of early adopters and I was kind of at the end of their era, but they were all became really good friends of mine. And a couple of them were really, really talented. Brian Kelly, who was a good friend of mine. He raced, he was on the national team a couple years as a master. He's like 10 years older than me, but as a master, he got to go to France one year and race for the US team at Worlds. I think he went to Worlds twice. And then another cat here, Darren Schlake, was probably the most gifted athlete, or one of them for sure. Like he, a total freak. He raced. Yeah, he was really, really good. Mark Savory was really good. Like, there was a lot of really good guys around here. I was a ways back from them, but not that far off, you know?
Like, well, it's surprising what happens when you surround yourself with good people. And suddenly, yes, maybe you are comparing yourself, but they're taking you along, right? You know, cycling is a Peloton sport, not just in, you know, strategy or the Tour de France or anything like that. Like, working together, you really do build an overall fitness when you get yourself in with the right group of people. It sounds like you were definitely in with the right group of people. And I mean, this is you're going on 30 years of active cycling, it sounds like. So I'm kind of curious, like, what keeps you going in that? Like, what is it that has, and maybe it's changed over time, but tell me a little bit about what's kept you interested and active in cycling for the last 30 years.
I think I just love it. You know, I think about that all the time. Like, I'm still out here just kicking my ass every day training. And it's like, you know, part of it is the experience of going to a race and you go with it, you're over your head and you blow up and then you keep going. And when it's all over, you're like, oh my God, that was amazing. Like, I'm glad I could push through that and do, it's kind of almost self-discovery, you know, like figuring out, like you learn about yourself. Like, I've gotten better now at not dropping out so much of races. I'm trying, I say that, but I'll probably DNF my next race. I'm just kidding. But like, I don't know. I think it's just, part of it too is just being out in nature, like being able to be like, oh, I'm going to go do a nice long ride. Today I did a 4.5 hour ride and I was out by Cortland and Wilbur and riding through cornfields, and that keeps me going for sure. You know, like being able to get out and see nature, and I try to get out to the mountains quite a bit, you know, a couple, three times a year so I can get out and ride out there. And I don't know, just, and also, you know, I've met a lot of different people and I continue to meet new people, you know, like I just met you. I met you recently, you know, races, you know what I'm saying? There's just a whole being in it for that long, things filter through so much where it's like, oh, I met these people, these people are out of it now, it's kind of, not to say I'm like the wise old grandpa or something, but I kind of feel like there's nothing, like, you go to a race and there's, I'm probably not going to see something that I haven't seen before, you know, and you can kind of be like, oh, I know how to deal with this situation because I've done it before or whatnot. I think at this point, you know, and not to say I'm on borrowed time, but I'm 53 now. So any of these races where I get a podium, I'm like, this is gravy. Like, I'm enjoying it more now, honestly, because I'm like, I'm still able to do this at this age. And, you know, and that, you know, I don't see a lot of the people that I grew up with doing this are still doing it so much. A few of them are, and I'm happy that they're still doing it. But, you know, people come and go in anything, any sport. People can't do it forever. Cycling is pretty amazing in the fact that you can do it forever. You might slow down. Hopefully, yeah, you don't slow down. I feel like I've kind of sped up in the last couple of years just through training, different training. But you still, it's just, you're still out there doing it.
Like, yeah.
And what am I, what else am I going to do? Here's, I lost you.
Oh yeah, our connection's a little poor. So it sounds like you said, what else am I going to do? Is
yeah, what am I going to do with all my time? My kids are grown now. They're 19 and 21. Like, they don't take as much time. So yeah, I'm happy I have more time to get out and enjoy the bike.
Very cool. Well, and that makes sense. And there are a few points in there that I want to come back to. First of all, as a race director, I feel like I've got a challenge where I'm like, okay, what can I do that John Rocky has never seen before? I think that's a challenge that I would love to take on. Nothing too crazy. Nothing like, I'm not going to destroy anybody by any means, but like, I'm going to take that as kind of a personal challenge. I like that.
Dang, I shouldn't have said that.
And then, you mentioned training and some things that you're learning about right now. And so, given that you have, you know, 30 years of experience training in different ways and maybe in different parts of your life and everything like that, tell me a little bit about where you are now and kind of how your training has evolved over time. Are you still using the same training routine that you did 30 years ago, or is it very different?
No, it's totally different. So I was always doing, when coming up for the mountain bike era, whatnot, I was, you know, doing the real traditional, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you do aerobic, then you do tempo, and then you do threshold work the next block, and progressively. And then you're like, okay, I did my anaerobic stuff. Now I'm ready to race. So it was like a real progressive block. And I did that forever, a lot of VO2 work. And then when power meters kind of came on, so that probably is 2010, maybe 2011, I was racing on Team Chaos. I had started racing on the road more. And probably 2012, I'm guessing, was I joined Team Chaos, and I started working. That's when power meters kind of came on. So I got a power meter, got tested, got my FTP, and then that great book, I think it's just not meter, gives you all the workouts and whatnot. And I kind of started doing all that. And I don't know if you knew Lee Bumgarner.
I do. Yeah, Lee's Lee's been on the podium a few times at the series, and yeah, he's great.
Yeah, yeah. So we started racing together probably 2013 on Team Chaos. He joined Team Chaos, and he's a big numbers guy, and I'm a little bit of a numbers geek too. Like, so it helped having him, and we kind of started pushing each other a little bit and like comparing numbers and being like, oh, we got to do this. And granted, we were racing as a team then. We had a really, really good team, and Lee was our best guy. Like, if there was going to be a sprint, 100% he was going to win.
Well, like, Lee is not a small guy either. Like, if I remember right, his legs are like serious tree trunks, and he's fairly,
like,
fairly tall. Yeah. Yeah. I see your numbers you know, you it would take a little bit to compare your numbers to him. You definitely have to get down to like the watts per kilogram sort of thing to really compare apples to apples.
But just the intuitive stuff of like looking at like, oh, we did this training ride or we did this race. Let's look at our numbers. Like, oh, this is where I blew up. Like just kind of, it was just a new way to approach it that hadn't, you know, I hadn't done before. And that still is real periodic training. Like, okay, we'll do, you know, it's January, I'll start doing a big block of aerobic. And then February, we do a bunch of tempo. And then we go to threshold. So you're kind of ready to race at the end of March. So did a bunch of that. That was, I don't know, I felt great. We had a good team too, Team Chaos, Lee. We did a couple years of the flyover series. I don't know if you've heard of that, but no. It was a Midwest thing. This guy from South Dakota, Jason Engel, put it on. So there was, I think it lasted for 3 years, but there was big payouts. Like the winning, there was, I think, 6 races. So it was a series. It was an Omnium, not every weekend, but 6 weekends of Omnium racing, where there'd be a time trial, a road race, and a crit. So you get points, right? So the first year they do it, the first race we go to, and Lee ends up winning the overall. So we have a bunch of strong guys. We're like, all right, we're racing for Lee this year. So I ended up being kind of a worker for him, you know. But that being said, 100% you do the work and he's going to win the sprint. Like I saw that. I bet I did that 30 times over the 30 to 40 times. It's like bury yourself to keep it together or close a move down and then get blown out the back and pull up and be like, Lee, did you win? He'd be like, yep. So it was like, so it was fun. It was a real different dynamic, you know, racing as a team. It really fun, really, really fun. But then that kind of, you know, that changes at a certain point, you know, you get over that. It's a little dangerous, I'm going to say. The turning point probably on that for me was we got John Borselman was on our team and we kind of were helping him. He was coming up, getting, just starting to list. And we were training him and just phenomenal. I don't know if you know that guy at all or know who he is. He's pro now. Like he's won Gravel Worlds 2 times and just a great rider, super great guy, good friend of mine. But we were helping him come up and we're kind of going to hand the reins over to him. I was like, oh, I got one more year. I'll help him. Like John Fry was on our team too. So it was kind of me and Lee were kind of the point of being like, oh, we're going to get these kids through this year and we're kind of done. You know, I was at the point of like seeing people get hurt, me getting hurt. But then we went to the lacrosse, the Omnium, one of the first races of the season. And John Borselman breaks his pelvis, has to rush to the ER. I go there. And that was kind of the end for me, honestly, of that, road racing. That was kind of, I had already had that in the back of my mind, like this is dangerous, I'm going to try not to crack, you know. And not to say it's inevitable you're going to get hurt racing bikes, but anyway, so he got hurt and that was kind of the end of my road racing career, right? So yeah. Then kind of farted around for a few years, riding bikes. I've always ridden bikes, I just didn't really race much. But then gravel kind of came on. I was like, oh, I'll start doing this. I'll try this for a while. It seems kind of fun. And I don't think I'd raced for 3 years. And I lined up and did Gravel Worlds, 150 miles and had a great ride. I think I got like 20th maybe. And was like, oh yeah, this is great. But so shortly after that, John, I think he won that year. He'd been racing pro and he'd been back here. His parents live here. He's in California now living, racing for, I think he races for Ventum. He's kind of a privateer now, but his parents are here. So he comes back quite a bit. And so during those years of that kind of starting, he'd be back here and I'd be training with him and he'd be like, oh, I got to do low MFC. And he just was doing a completely different thing that I knew nothing about. It was like, I've been doing this for like 25, 30 years. What are you like? I don't even know.
What are you talking about? You've got this new language. Yes.
Yeah. So I kind of started, he helped me out with that for a while.
Now, what, let's be specific now. What is that? Because I heard what it sounded like was LVT, low or
max
low
fat zone. Max fat, MFZ.
MFZ. Yeah. So break this down a little bit. What is this? Yeah.
It's your maximum MFZ is your max fat zone. So it's kind of blends with zone two a little bit. But what it is you spend all, I probably spend 90% of my time in my max fat zone. And what you're building, it's zone two, is you're building all this mitochondria. So as that mitochondria builds, you get more efficient, your speed goes up in max fat zone, but you're building all this mitochondria. So it actually also brings your lactate threshold up because you have more mitochondria. So without doing any threshold work, you just have more capacity because you have all this extra mitochondria where you built. So go ahead, you have a question.
I think the common question with that when people start thinking about zone two or start kind of shifting their brains or just trying to get into this and figure out and like break into it, because they might hear, hey, yeah, just do a lot of zone two training. I think there's two questions. One, like, you know, how much is enough and how do you know? And then two, how do you still get that top end speed if you're doing all this work at zone two? I'm curious what your, I've heard a few different things, but I'm curious what your perspective is on it and what you've tried.
So besides that max fat zone, so that brings your cruising speed up. Like when I started, so John helped me for a while and then I hired him and he was my coach for I think two or three seasons. And then I kind of just am like, kind of went on my own because just my schedule is weird sometimes. It's like, and I don't know. I know my body pretty well and I feel like I know the workouts now, so I can kind of fit them in where they work for me instead of being like, oh, I got to do this day. And over the years, that's the only coach I've ever had. He was my coach for, I want to say, three seasons. And there's something really good about that, of having somebody tell you to do so you take the brain workout. But in the same sense, too, it's kind of like, I know my body pretty well. I think I can add an extra VO2 day because I'm not that tired, you know. It's kind of, I don't know. I'm maybe a little bit more of a DIY guy at heart. So it's kind of, and I'm cheap too. So it's like, I don't know if I want to spend the money on a coach. Cycling's expensive enough. Like,
yeah, but you're right. Like, I mean, having a coach for a small amount of time or even some amount of time, you can learn so much and achieve those goals. They can really help you break through in certain areas. So what did he have you do that kind of you found valuable or how have you broken through?
So the max fat thing too is you're for gravel racing, right? We're racing 100 miles, 150 miles. I just did Unbound, did 200 miles. So you're kind of trying to teach your body to be fat burning instead of burning glycogen, right? So if you can trick your body, it's not a trick, it's just repeated hours and hours at max fat, your body starts becoming a fat burning machine versus a glycogen burning machine. So if you, like in those long races, if you can have your body burning fat, you're not using very many matches. You're still using matches. I see, like riding max fat, I still eat 80 carbs an hour, 70 to 80 carbs an hour when I go do long rides. But if I was riding tempo, I would probably have to eat 120. I mean, you're just kind of trying to stop the bleeding with food at a certain point. But if you can ride efficiently at max fat, you're using your fat, right? And I think the number is your fat has 9 to 1 energy versus glycogen. And it's kind of an endless source too. Like I'm probably 7%, 8% body fat now. But there's still fat there to live off of, you know, on those long rides. So it's kind of a way to stop the bleeding. But as far as like the intensity goes, besides that max fat, which is a staple, I did a lot of VO2, but like high VO2, like almost like generally your VO2 is 1.05 to 1.2. So percentage of your FTP, I'm doing my VO2s at about 1.24. 1.23, which is actually more considered your max aerobic. So you're kind of trying to pull that up, your aerobic system up that way, right? So besides all the efficiency of the max fat, you're also trying to pull yourself up quite a bit through that. And then we did some shuttling, like lactate shuttling work, where you do a minute or a couple minutes at above your threshold, like 1.1, so supra threshold, and then you do the exact same amount of time at your mid max fat to try to flush the lactate. So it's kind of a way, it's really good. Like, I've noticed, like, my legs aren't dead very often. In fact, so I don't know, he kind of turned me into a stage racer. Like, I'm not ever tired on the bike.
You know, I think anybody who's in cycling would be like, wait, you're not tired ever? Sign me up.
I mean, I'm tired.
Figure out how to do that.
There's never, very rare, like, and I think that's because I eat now. Like, I honestly, like, I rode 4.5 hours today and I ate 400 carbohydrates. So that's like what a stage racer does. Like, you're constantly like, you try to come home not like, oh my God, I'm famished. Like, and also it keeps your energy up, you know, like I'm able to go do, like at the end of my ride today, I had to ride 230 watts for the last half hour. Like, no big deal, because I'm eating and drinking the whole time, you know. Granted, you get a little sore in the back, you know, arm. In your max fat zone. But so that's kind of the top end stuff. I don't do a lot of sprinting stuff. I don't do a lot of threshold work. But as I sit, you know, by doing all that work at zone two, I definitely have raised my threshold. But it's, I don't do a threshold workouts.
Okay, so what I'm hearing then is that, you know, you're putting in a good amount of, like, a lot of hours at that zone two max fat area, and then you're spending a lot more time up at that closer to the threshold point, but not quite to really bring up your VO2 max. But you're doing it very purposefully to bring up that top end speed. And through a combination of these, and I'm guessing the ratio is probably like, what, 1 to 5, 1 to 4 in terms of, like, mostly that VO2 fat max area, and then maybe one VO2 threshold workout a week.
Yeah, so I'll do one VO2 or max aerobic, which is 1.23 of your FTP a week. And then I'll do one shuttling workout a week, which is like 2 sets of 6x2 or something. And then I will do some big gear stuff too. And that kind of slows your VLA max, which is your glycolytic, how much glycogen you're going to use. So what you try to suppress the amount of glycogen you're using and use more fat. So it's really different. Like I said, I was did the same thing for years and years. And then John got a really, really good coach who is still his coach. He's out of San Francisco and learned all this new stuff. And it's great. I feel like at 53, I'm faster than I've ever been. I'm not quick like I used to be, like racing crits and sprinting and covering tacks and jumping, but I'm definitely slower in that aspect, but it's more patience. Like, okay, those guys are jumping, I'll just motor back to it. You know, it's like, I don't have as many of those super quick matches, you know?
Yeah. But you know what you've got in the tank, and you know what you can rely on, and you know, you've got your strategy, and you can be smart about that, because you spent a lot of time both in preparing and also with your body to understand it. So, I mean, that it's one of those things that I do love so much about cycling, is that we do get to learn something every year we can, you know. You can, there's always something more to learn, and that can be both exciting and intimidating at times. And so I wanted
to fun. Don't let it intimidate you. It's supposed to be fun.
right. Yeah.
It is fun, though.
Attitude matters, right? Like, you know, you know, go into it with that fun attitude, and suddenly it just makes, it's fun. That's how it is.
Yeah, sometimes it's easy to go out and be like, oh, I got this long workout and like, I'm tired. Like, it's so much easier if you can be like, I'm getting to do this. This is great. I get to do this. Like, yeah. Not everybody can do this. I'm happy I'm doing this. It totally changes.
One other question that I had, so we kind of get an idea of what you work out and what you've been focusing on. What about recovery? I think as I'm about a decade behind you, but I find that as I get a little bit older, my recovery becomes much more important than, you know, going hard every workout. I can go hard, but I just have to make sure to do that recovery, or I get diminishing returns because I'll get hurt, or I'll be too sore or things. So do you have a recovery routine or?
After long rides, I make sure I eat within the first hour, 100 carbs, like just to refuel the stores. John was adamant about doing that on these long rides, eat 100 carbs within the first hour. So you're like,
now, are you saying 100 grams of carbs or 100
grams of carbs?
100 grams of carbs. Okay.
So that's probably what, like 400, is it 400? 400 grams of calories. I think it's pretty close. I think it's four to one ish. But
yeah,
I don't stretch enough. I wish I stretched more. I walk with my wife a lot in the mornings when I can. That's a couple of days a week. I think that really helps, honestly, doing some walks, like 30, 40 minute walks. Like, it's just a different thing. And it's, you know, I used to be from the school of like, oh, got to save the legs. Like, you can't be walking. Like, I got to do these hard rides and recover. But really, walking is such a simple thing. It's not a lot of TSS. And it's just, you're out in nature. And that's something to be said for that. Like, breathing in it, good air and getting sunshine. That'll help you recover right there.
Like, yeah, that TSS, that training stress score, you're always kind of like, you know, that can be in the back of a lot of folks' heads. I'm a fan of swimming. I'm not a great swimmer, I'm not a fast swimmer, but what I love about swimming is it has low impact and it activates my core. I've done you know, rolling and things like that. So, and then if you're a Strava pro, or you know, pay for their account, they actually have a recovery app that's really cool anymore. I don't know if you've seen that. I don't know if you use Strava in that way, but you basically say This is the part of my body that's sore, and they'll say, okay, here's a 15-minute recovery routine to fix that sore place.
Oh, nice. I'll have to try that. I keep wanting to try the 2-month free trial. I have a bunch of friends. A good friend of mine, Hanwei Wang, he moved out of here, but he is a Strava junkie. Like, he's just, when he lived here, he was just taking KOMs left and right because he had the live thing on this thing, and it's like, oh, it's super funny. I have not chased it that hard, and I'm scared that if I were to get that, I would be like, it would mess my training up, because I'd be like, oh, I'm on this segment and oh shit, I'm like 3 seconds ahead, I better go for it. But that being said, I'm going on a nice road trip up to Canada and Montana next month. And I thought about getting it because I think it has good, is it called heat maps, that'll kind of show where everybody rides. So I might get it just to kind of check that out and get some routes off. But yeah, it's funny. People love it. Like, there's definitely people here in Lincoln. There's probably 10 people I can think of that are like KOM chasers, like all day. Like, you look at their Strava and it's like, oh shit, he got this weird neighborhood one. Like, three people.
Yeah. I've long since turned my Strava KOM warnings off, but I do have a mode, and I do go around and look at things, and I do add segments around here, because over on the Iowa side, there's plenty of places for segments. I actually lived, speaking of Hanwei, it's been fun following him on Strava because he moved to the Bay Area in California. Yeah. That's where I lived before moving here to Iowa. And so he's doing a lot of these routes and things that I'm like, I'm living vicariously through him on some of those amazing climbs in some areas that are just really beautiful out there. Well, yeah. John, I don't want to. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, he him moving out of here was a big loss to the Lincoln cycling community. He was really good about getting people together, and he was just always excited to ride. And me and him are close to the same fitness level, so it was always fun to ride with him. And really over like the last year and a half that he was here, we became pretty good friends and started riding together. And yeah, he's gone because he was really good too, like knows a lot of people. I'm more of kind of an introvert a little bit. I say that, but I know a lot of people. But he was more involved with meeting people in the cycling community, and I'd show up to meet him for a ride and I'd meet like 5-6 new people, you know. I'm definitely kind of set in my ways where I ride with a few of the same people. So it was nice to have him around, kind of making community.
Oh yeah. Absolutely great. I gotta quickly, I'm going to tell you my favorite Hanway story, because it was for the Silver City Century, which was the one that you podiumed on here this last year. It was the first year of the Silver City Century. And, I post the route on Wednesday, and then I noticed, because I put a few new Strava segments on the route, I noticed that things were lighting up on someone going through these segments. And I'm like, oh, come on. Nobody rides some of these roads out here. What's going on? And so I went and looked, and sure enough, he had gone and scouted the route. And, but the funny thing is one of the parts of that first Silver City went through a old, well, it's called Willow Slough, and it's a DNR area. And the plan was for me to mow it so that you could actually see where you need to go and what you need to do and everything. But he somehow followed closely enough the GPS track that I had through a very unmowed Willow Slough section, and
that's funny.
He had some funny stories to tell about like how he was like, where the heck am I going? What is going on? But great attitude
he had that new cyclist energy. That's what it is. Like he went, like I'm at the point where I'm just gonna show up. I'm not gonna go like scope drive an hour to go scope the course out. Like I'm gonna race it on that day. It's awesome he cared that much. He was like wanted to do that good that he'd drive, you know, probably an hour and a half just to go like pre-ride the course. Like that's great. Like he was a speed skater, super good speed skater. Yeah. So he came to cycling, and he was super competitive dude. Like he
definitely had the strength, the endurance, and then that competitive attitude. Yeah. All right. Well, here, I hate to wrap up, but I got one last question for you, John. And I know I mentioned this question before we got on the recording and everything, but I am curious if anything came to mind. If you had a magic wand, what would you do with that magic wand to make anything happen in cycling, whether it's gear or locations or where, what you were able to do, what's kind of like your big desire that you'd love to see happen?
That's a tough one. I don't even know. Like, as far as equipment, I love my bike so much, I wouldn't change anything on it. There's so many races now too. It's hard to pick. Like that's a good problem right there. Before it was like, I remember, you know, 10 years ago being like, oh, I got to figure out where to go to race. Like now it seems like every weekend within 3 hours, if I wanted to, I could go do a race, so I wouldn't change that. I don't know, honestly. I keep bringing up John Borselman, but he's living out of his van, traveling around to races, living in up in Colorado and getting to do all that stuff. I would love to be able to do that, but you know, kids, mortgage, work, like that's just a little bit of longing for my youth too. It's good to see people doing that. Like I like that the gravel scene now, all these pro cyclists are living out of vans, like total hippie lifestyle, like just showing up racing, living in their vans, living at altitude. Like that's I wish I was 20 again and could do it. Not necessarily, but you know what I'm saying? A little bit of longing for that. That's a great lifestyle. Like
totally. May we, I think we all at least have our hippie moment for a little while at some point, you know.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. Well, John, this has been fantastic chatting with you. I've learned so much. I'm definitely going to be thinking a little bit more about how I integrate, max fat and what I'm doing with my training. Honestly, I think I really love your attitude towards everything. I think that's incredibly inspiring. So thank you so much for bringing that energy and being a good example for me. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for putting on the races too. I know it's not easy and it's great. It's like I said, there's races around here and thank you for putting them on. I really appreciate it. I'm going to try to make as many as I can.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. All right, we'll catch you later.
All right. Yeah, good talking to you. Thanks.